This is KDNK Community Radio. Between the years 1984 and 1999, Mary Ferguson had a public affairs program here on KDNK. This I remember. Mary recorded all of her shows on cassette tapes. These tapes have been lost for years. Mary's family discovered them and donated them to the Carbondale Historical Society, and KDNK was able to digitize all of the tapes. In collaboration with the Carbondale Historical Society, KDNK is proud to present the second part of a two-part conversation between Frank Smotherman and Mary Ferguson. Enjoy!
But still you're my own. In my beautiful memory. Oh, memory.
Sentimental Journey Home. That was kind of interesting. Let's see. Mary? Okay, no. This is the This I Remember show. And this is really the first time that I've had the pleasure of sitting in and trying to help with this show. I find it a fascinating thing that we're doing here. Today, the tape that you're going to be listening to, and I also want to tell, because we are taping this, and hopefully this will become a part of the living library of the Historical Society here in Carbondale, I want to tell you that the day is Sunday, March 18, 1984. My name is Frank Smotherman, and I'm co-hosting today with Miss Mary Ferguson. Say hello, Mary. Let's make sure. Katie and Kate.
Remember.
Oh, there we go. I'm sorry, I didn't even have your mic on, Mary. Elmer Baer is the subject of our program today, and Elmer is, in fact, we just found out from Konia, 82 years old. And in talking with Konia, I just had a very quick phone call with her. She really thought that Elmer had probably been in the Valley 50 to 60 years at least. What do you think, Mary?
I think he has been in the Valley at this all that time.
Well, the guy, I mean, I've heard about him ever since I got here.
Yes. Well-loved person in this valley.
Well, let us tell you a little bit about how this is happening. There have been two shows of this, I believe, so far. And let's see, on the first one, it was yourself and Virginia Morrison Marks.
Yes.
Kind of introducing the series. And then I don't remember who the tape was last week.
The next tape was Agnes and Chuck Ferris.
Right, Agnes. Even now, I think I'll go ahead and say why this thing means something to me. It reminds me when she speaks of Agnes and Chuck Ferris, because a dear friend of mine is Mrs. Agnes Ferris, or Agnes Rontz. And it's my understanding that Agnes Ferris and Agnes Rontz were school buddies and best of friends.
They're very good friends.
Is what I've heard. Well, the thing that has struck me and my particular interest in this show, Mary, as far as I'm concerned, I'll never forget when a friend of mine died who was instrumental in helping me professionally, Mario Rontz. And at the time that Mario died, I felt an immediate loss that I hadn't listened to that man. I hadn't talked to him more. And I see that very much as a value of this show. We'll put these tapes on record, and school children 100 years from today can listen to Elmer Baer and Agnes Ferris and Chuck Ferris and the different people that we'll wind up interviewing, and there'll be a living memorial and a testament of what happened here.
This I remember, and this will be what they remember.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be great. Well, I'll tell you, to our listening audience out there, Mary and I both probably need to grab a drink of water. We've got up some old tunes here, and I'm going to spin this record for a minute so we can get our breath and maybe figure out which direction we're headed here for the last 27 minutes. It is 6:33 KDNK time, and the show that you were supposed to be listening to was This I Remember. Now, we have a wonderful personage of history sitting here in the studio with us, so I'm sure if you hang with us for a little bit, you're going to learn some things today. But listen up to some old-time music here for a minute and let Mary and I catch our breaths, and we'll be right back. Well, Mary, I think we got a little drink of water and had a few laughs here trying to figure out what we're going to do for the next 18 minutes.
We apologize to Elmer because this tape is not loud enough. We will try, we will do the best we can, and forgive us.
Well, there is. As I was telling Mary during the break, I listened to this tape a couple times on a piece of our equipment up here where I could not adjust the volume, and I thought that here on the board I could adjust the volume and get some of the distortion out of it, but it just didn't work. The theory of the show, and Mary, you're instrumental in this idea, weren't you? What do you really hope to do with the show?
I hope to build a library of memories. I hope that the people will share their memories with us. We are working on the Historical Society Museum. We hope to have a museum here someday. Right now, the city has given the Historical Society the use of the little jail. We have some records there and some things there. We would like to build a museum. The valley is rich with historical things. If they could be placed in one place where things are safe, where we could show them to the people. But right now, we are trying to get oral histories of all of our people in this area.
Well, I spoke with you about this earlier, and maybe it wasn't on this subject, but maybe it was over when the butter and cheese program was going on, and apparently that is somewhat directed at senior citizens, but I don't know, maybe it was you or maybe it was Alda Daring that was telling me just the numbers. In terms of numbers, how many senior citizens are there, and how do you qualify? Do you have to be 60, 65, or?
The program is, we know it, is for senior citizens and for needy. And now when so many of the younger people are out of jobs, we have a lot of needy people here in this area. The program itself is through the Retired Senior Citizens Volunteer Program, RSVP.
The one that Virginia helps administer?
Yes. And she told a great deal about that on our first tape.
Right.
We have cheese, honey, butter that is stored by the government and is now being given out to senior citizens and
folks that need it.
People.
Well, how many senior citizens are involved in the, like, well, maybe the number is counted, maybe they know down at the RSVP, but
we had some 400 people.
That you gave food to in Carbondale, Colorado?
Yes.
In that last program, was about 10 days ago,
yes,
wasn't it? 410 senior citizens?
I won't say senior citizens because many of them were not senior citizens.
Do you have any idea how many people, what is the age, 60 or 65 that they consider?
65.
Generally 65. Mm-hmm. How many would be in Carbondale, would you say? Or the
I didn't break that down as to account. We just counted the number of pounds of butter that we gave out, the number of packages of cheese, the number of cartons of honey.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at, in a way, is this oral history idea. How many people do you think we could tape? I mean, there's probably 200 or 300, right?
Yes,
in the immediate area,
aren't
there?
In this immediate area, we have so many, many people who are natives here, and people who came here long years ago and intend to stay here, and the history of the valley is rich with folklore.
Well, one of the things, and I'm sure as this program unfolds every Sunday evening at 6 o'clock, one of the stories that will come out is the Aosta story, the Aosta-Italy connection.
Legend has it that a Cerise family came from Italy, and as soon as he got enough money, he would send for someone else to come over, and that whoever came over was a cerise. And the next family that came over were also cerises. Now, how much of this is true, I don't know, because there are many, many cerise families in this area who are not related to one another. Nevertheless, the name is still cerise.
Well, that's funny.
That's legend.
Well, it's dangerous for a newcomer. I lived up in Aspen for 7 years, and I came down here and I bought from a cerise. I was talking to Reno Cerise the other night up in Basalt, and you have to be real careful in talking to these people, because a lot of them don't even care about the other ones, don't want anything to do with another one of them, and it's interesting, the connections, and that's one of the things I'm hoping this show will fill in for me, is kind of how these people are all interconnected.
In teaching a high school class, a home ec class, I had 6 Cerise girls in that class.
In 1 year?
In one class in 1 year. Now, these 6 girls belong to 3 different families, not related. But that is what legend has it. That's why we have so many Cerises in the family.
Okay. Well, why don't we go back for a minute, Mary?
I hope they don't crown me.
Well, hopefully everyone out there have a little indulgence with us this evening as Mary and I sit up here and kind of wing it. Well, let's go back, because there are some subjects, and I'm going to give Mary a second to rest here. There's one subject that we'll try to get into that came from my listening to Elmer's tape, but there's one, and I spoke during the break where we played some music with Mary about a custom that, maybe it wasn't a custom, but apparently a number of families in this area brought Indian children up from the reservations, wherever those might have been, and it was probably a charitable gesture and something that they felt they were doing their part in terms of helping humankind and another race, and they would bring the children up here. But Elmer told the story about, it was a wonderful story, I'm sorry folks can't hear, we're going to get Elmer back on, there's just no question, but Elmer talked about the time that a medicine man, for whatever reason, came up into this area. And another interesting thing that, I mean, I'm just recalling off of the brief notes that I have, but he talked about a medicine man not being particularly a doctor in the Indian culture, but I really do not recall the specific function. Maybe it was more a philosopher kind of individual within the group. But he talked about the character of the man and the age of the man. And what I really wanted to capture off of this tape, or hope that we could transfer onto the listening public, was some of the philosophy that came out of this. And this old Indian man, Elmer asked, did the medicine man think it was valuable that people in this area were bringing children from the Indian reservation to this area and educating them? And one of the things that Elmer said was that he got a kick out of, he said, He got the impression, and this has got to be an old-time saying that you wouldn't hear very often, he got the impression that the Indian medicine man thought, and I'll quote, thought that people around here didn't have enough sense to know to pour sand in a rat hole. I thought that was a pretty good story. But in terms of the medicine man finally through an interpreter, in talking with Mr. Bayer, said it was absolutely the worst thing in the world that the white man in this area could do to take those children off the reservation and bring them up here. The Indian man told Mr. Bayer to go tell Sammy, which is what they called the government, Uncle Sam, go tell Sammy to please bring electricity and water to the Indian areas, let these children stay at home and be educated at home and not grow up lazy through living in a white man system where it was the medicine man's impression that people pushed buttons and water came out and people pushed buttons and electricity came on. And I just thought the philosophical point that Indian man raised was extremely valid and probably even is pertinent today. Well, going on into the tape, and this is the subject that Mary and I had visited about here briefly, Elmer moved to Marble in 1926 and apparently owned
a little over 2,800 acres up in that area. And he talked about, and I really didn't get the impression of what he did up there, but he talked about the railroad. He helped on the railroad, is what my notes say. And I'm sure Elmer's going to correct me if he's out there listening. But he said at the time that they cut the stone that is so famous, having come from this area for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, that they actually had to build a special car. Apparently the grade of the track was such up there that it was extremely dangerous. They lost a lot of cars, and that they actually built an oversized car to carry that stone out of Marble. And my notes say that the stone weighed 5,700 tons.
And it was on two flat cars. Now the problem was to get the stone from the quarry to Marble, and there it could be taken by the railroad train to Carbondale. And when the large stone came to Carbondale, school was dismissed, so all of the children could go out and stand along the railroad track to see that huge piece of solid, pure marble go by.
How long would this thing have been on the road? Two cars?
Two flat cars.
Well, were the cars together, or was it?
Yes, they were fastened together.
Fastened together.
Because the block of marble was on the two cars. The problem that Elmer was talking about is getting the marble from the mill.
From the quarry.
From the quarry.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a downhill track that there was danger of the flat car getting away from them,
mm-hmm,
on wheels.
Yes.
There was no way of holding it back. So my understanding is that they used a log and put the front of the flat cars on a log and rolled it into Marble by dragging the back wheels to keep it from running away from them.
Hmm.
That was...
It's kind of interesting. Well, he told the story, too, about the fellow who apparently started the marble mine or something actually died on a runaway up there. Is that a story that
I don't know.
Rings a bell with you? So the kids, when you went down to the railroad track to watch this giant piece of marble go by, where would you have been physically in the valley? Were you right out?
We were up here where the schoolhouse is now.
Where the middle school is?
Where the middle school is now, because the railroad, the track went up that way.
Well, that's what a lot of people don't know.
Past the Fender House and the Parker Motel. That was the railroad track.
And it came on down by Barry's garage and the post office.
Yes. And met the...
Connected.
Here to the depot.
Connected down here.
And, of course, that was... there were no houses in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Or that is, there's not the houses that we have there now. So... most of the railroad bed is now being taken up by houses.
Yeah.
It's no longer a railroad bed. It's homes and gardens.
Well, just in relation to that particular area, I was aware of the railroad coming in there. The cabins that Julius Burning owned over here that had been gone for five years, were those a part of the railroad complex?
No.
Or Julius built those?
Burning built those.
So was, in fact, the area really right behind us here at the Dinkle Building, was that a corral at one time?
That was a railroad yard, and the stackyards are still there, where the cattle used to be loaded onto the train.
And would that be on the other side of the existing tracks from where
we
are now?
No, it's on this side of the tracks.
Okay.
Between here and the railroad track that we're using now.
Hmm. Well, Mary... I'll tell you, it is 6:57, and we kind of limped our way through this.
And again, I apologize for not being better prepared for this.
Well, we didn't know we were going to have to do this, did we?
And I do hope that we have Elmer back, because he is worth listening to.
Well, what's coming up in the coming weeks? Do you know who we are supposed to do next week?
Next week, I understand that we're going to have a fireman and a retired fireman, and talking about the fire company.
Do you know who that would be in name?
The only name that was given me was Gene Schilling.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know who the retired fireman is, but I think I probably know him because I'm retired too.
Well, a part of the way this is happening, isn't it, is the high school children, as some sort of class project, are to interview the folks.
They're going to interview the firemen and the retired firemen. They're going to prepare a tape, an oral history tape.
Okay.
At one time, we had a two-wheel cart with a hose wrapped around it, and the first person that heard the fire bell would hook onto the cart and take off wherever the fire happened to be. And the man of town would take off after them.
Where was the firehouse in old days?
The firehouse is over here where the Mountain Air Motel is now.
You mean next to the old granary?
Right on Main Street, behind the telephone building.
And the granary was right next there.
Yes.
Where Vicki Brown and some folks live. Yeah, I just learned a couple years ago that's what that was, a granary.
A granary.
Well, it's 6:59, and this is KDNK, and classical music is supposed to start at 7. So I'm just going to, in anticipation of our next person on the air, Jim Groh with classical music, I'm going to play a copy of an old tune by Charlie Spivack and his orchestra, It's Been a Long, Long Time. Is that appropriate, Mary?
That's right. It's been a long, long time.
Well, is there anything more we ought to say before we play some old tunes?
I want to thank the youngsters who did interview Elmer Baer. And in the future, we're going to have another tape with Bill Smith. And we hope that we can get Bill Smith and Dean Smith together because they are two old-timers of this area, and Dean can tell a lot of stories because this Cardinal's his town.
Well,
and of course, Bill knows more about marble and the railroad.
And Bill is Sophie's sister's husband?
Right.
With Sophie's sisters. Well, and for those of you out there who don't know, I mean, it's valuable, I think, to even know where these people live so that you can stop and spend a minute with them. Now, Mr. Smith, Dean, lives over... Let's see, it would be on the same street with the Smithy. It'd be 3rd Street.
That used to be our first post office. His house was our first post office.
Are you kidding? That's crazy.
And I think some of the old mailboxes are still in that wing of his house.
In Dean's house. But if you ever want to have him, I know my wife always goes over in the summer and chats with him, and she's forever walking away with a big head of lettuce or something. He's got irrigation water running.
Right.
And just apparently ran this town at one point in our history.
We depended on Dean. We did have, as we said before, we had a mayor and our councilman, but Dean was our marshal.
That's what I understand. He pretty much held the town together.
He did everything.
Well, it's that sort of heritage is passed on. I'm sure if you can't find a water pipe in this town with Art Nadel, Art goes and asks Dean.
Right.
In the living history of these people, I think it's even valuable to tell them where some of these old folks live so they can walk over and see old Dean and spend a few minutes and learn something. Well, Mary, we're beyond our time here. We're at 7:01. I'm going to let this record roll, and I want to thank you for coming up. And folks out there, we'll have this together a little better next week, won't we, Mary?
Have patience with us.
Okay.
We'll do better than this.
Thank you so much.
Number 49, she's the only one that'll sound that way. Oh. on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day. From the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. Here she goes. Passengers is mighty big, and they all want lifts to Brown's Hotel. Cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell, all the way from Philadelphia on the Atchison to Pica and the Santa Fe.
This has been the second part of a two-part conversation between Frank Smotherman and Mary Ferguson. Thank you to the Carbondale Historical Society for helping make these conversations available. The complete audio archive and transcriptions can be found at carbondalehistory.org. This is Katie and Kay.